Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So sticking with networking for a second, I'm just ordering my first Ubiquiti AP, which is very exciting because with the better network that we got from the ISP, we're able to use a 2.5 uplink. And I previously measured the decrease in speed using the mesh. I'm using Ethernet. And when we moved into this apartment that I'm speaking to you from, I got a TP-Link mesh network as it's challenging as a renter to run Ethernet around the place. And I measured what I got in our old connection at the wall was about 1,300, so 1,000 down, 200 up, or 100 up about. And it was about a 4 to 5-fold decrease in the living room. And that's with a 3-mesh network, which is, in other words, 1 main unit, 2 satellites, which is, I think, more than should be even required in a 60-meter apartment. So moving over to APs, I rigged up an old AP that I assumed wasn't going to be able to get around the place in a 60-meter apartment because there's walls and whatever. And it actually, I'm pretty sure it's doing a better job than the mesh system. It's also from TP-Link. So this has really restored my faith in APs and diminished my faith in mesh networks doing this wireless backhaul stuff because it just, I don't know, it doesn't seem to work as well. I know that for some times where you really can't get cabling even out the door. I'm using that kind of flat cabling to run under the door and get it around in places so I don't have to drill through walls. But I'd love to get your thoughts on mesh technology, because anytime you walk into, you know, a high street retail store, they're going to push mesh on you. If you say, you know, I want to get internet around the house, we used to use these things called range extenders that would bring the power, or at least what they said they did was run the wireless connectivity through the power network, through the copper in order to get it across rooms. And I have to say so far, based on this experience, my experience with mesh technology and wireless backhaul has been underwhelming. One other question about mesh to run past both of you is, I know that you can do wired backhaul. So let's say that I have a Ethernet backbone in my apartment, and I buy, you know, a TP-Link mesh network, and I want to put each one into an uplink with WAN. And I've got them running in access point mode. Now, at this point, my question is, what's the point? Why not just put in 3 APs? And what is the difference, more practically speaking? If they have that Ethernet connectivity, haven't I effectively just bought a few cheaper APs? And given that generally you get much more functionality from technology marketed as APs than you do from mesh networks, what would be the point in doing this in the first place? So over to you, Herman and Corin. Let's talk about mesh technology in home networking, business networking, and why, in my experience, maybe also in yours, trying to stick with Ethernet backbone and APs usually gives you better connectivity.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, coming to you from a very rainy Jerusalem today, and I am joined, as always, by my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, present and accounted for. Although I have to say, Corn, I am a little distracted by the state of our hallway. Our housemate Daniel has been running these incredibly long, flat white cables along the baseboards all morning.
I saw that. It looks like a high-speed spiderweb. He actually sent us a prompt about it because he has been going through a bit of a networking crisis with his new place. He is moving into this 60-meter apartment, and he has been wrestling with the classic modern dilemma, mesh networking versus dedicated access points.
It is the ultimate showdown for anyone who cares about their kilobits per second. And Daniel's experience is actually a perfect case study. He was telling me that he started with a mesh system, a 3-node setup in a 60-meter apartment, which, let's be honest, is a lot of hardware for that amount of space. And he saw his speeds drop by a factor of 4 or 5 in the living room compared to what he was getting at the wall.
That is a massive hit. You go from 1,300 megabits down to maybe 200 or 300? And the funny thing is, he fixed it by going old school. He dug up an old dedicated access point, ran a wired backhaul with those flat cables I mentioned, and suddenly everything is better.
It is a classic example of how marketing can sometimes lead us away from the most efficient technical solution. Today, we are going to tear into why that happens. We want to look at the practical differences between a mesh network running in wired access point mode versus just buying dedicated access points from the start.
And specifically, why the retail world is so obsessed with selling us mesh when, as Daniel found out, a simple wire and a dedicated point often perform better. We will talk about roaming protocols, the hidden tax of wireless backhaul, and what is actually happening when your devices hop between nodes.
I am excited for this one. It connects back to what we discussed in episode 252 about why gigabit internet can sometimes feel like dial-up. There is a lot of magic in the marketing of mesh that we need to demystify, especially now that Wi-Fi 7 is rolling out into high-end routers and devices, and we are already hearing early roadmap talk about whatever comes after Wi-Fi.
Let's start with the basics of what Daniel was experiencing. Herman, for a 60-meter apartment, which is roughly 650 square feet, having 3 mesh nodes sounds like overkill. Why would adding more hardware actually make the speed worse?
This is one of the most common misconceptions in home networking. People think more nodes equals more signal, which equals more speed. But in a small space, you run into 2 major problems, interference and overhead. When you have 3 nodes screaming at each other in a small apartment, they are often competing for the same limited wireless spectrum. It is like trying to have 3 separate conversations in a small elevator.
And the wireless backhaul Daniel mentioned is the real culprit there, right?
Exactly. In a standard mesh setup, the nodes talk to each other over the same Wi-Fi frequencies that your phone or laptop uses. This is called the backhaul. Even with Wi-Fi 7's multi-link operation, or MISL-O, which allows devices to use multiple bands at once, if you are using a dual-band mesh system, every time data travels from your laptop to a satellite node, and then from that node to the main router, that node has to repeat the signal. In many cases, this effectively halves your available bandwidth immediately because the radio can only do one thing at a time. It is a half-duplex environment.
So even if the box says 3 gigabits per second, you are losing half of that just to the internal communication between the boxes.
At least half. And when you add a second hop, like Daniel had with 3 nodes, the penalty compounds. By the time the signal gets to the 3rd node, it is fighting through layers of retransmissions and management overhead. This is why he saw that 4-to-5-fold decrease in speed. The airwaves were just too crowded with the mesh system talking to itself.
That makes sense. But then Daniel did something interesting. He switched to an access point with a wired backhaul. For those who aren't networking nerds, that just means he ran an Ethernet cable from the main router to the access point. Once you do that, you have essentially removed the wireless part of the mesh communication, right?
Precisely. You have moved the conversation from the crowded elevator to a private telephone line. The wireless spectrum is now entirely dedicated to your devices, like your phone or your smart TV. The backhaul is handled by the copper wire, which is full duplex, meaning it can send and receive at the same time at full gigabit speeds or higher with almost zero latency.
This brings us to the core of Daniel's question. If you have the ability to run an Ethernet backbone, and you set your mesh nodes to access point mode, what is the actual difference between that and just buying 3 dedicated access points from a company like Ubiquiti or Cisco?
That is a very insightful question. Technically, if you wire everything, the hardware is doing almost the same physical job. But the difference lies in the brain of the system. Dedicated access points are usually designed to be dumb on their own, but smart when managed by a central controller. Mesh systems are designed to be smart out of the box with zero configuration.
So it is about the software layer that manages how a device, say my phone, moves from the bedroom access point to the living room access point.
Yes, this is called roaming. In a traditional setup where you just buy 3 random unmanaged access points and give them the same name and password, your phone is the one making the decision. Your phone will cling to the bedroom signal until it is practically dead before it finally gives up and looks for the stronger living room signal. We call those sticky clients. It is incredibly frustrating because you will be standing right next to a fast access point, but your phone is still struggling with a weak signal from two rooms away.
I have definitely experienced that. It is like the phone is a loyal friend who refuses to leave a dying party.
Exactly. Now, a mesh system, even in wired access point mode, uses specific protocols to solve this, specifically the 802.11k, v, and r protocols. These allow the network to nudge your phone. The network says, "Hey, I see you are getting a weak signal from node A, but node B is right next to you and has plenty of capacity. Move over now."
So if I buy three dedicated, professional-grade access points, do I lose that nudging ability?
Not if you buy a coordinated system. If you get something like the Ubiquiti system Daniel mentioned he was looking into, you still have a controller that manages those same roaming protocols. The real difference is in the level of control and the hardware optimization. Professional access points are usually built with better antennas and more powerful processors specifically designed to handle many devices at once. They aren't trying to be a router, a switch, and a wireless bridge all at the same time. They do one thing very, very well.
It sounds like the mesh branding is really just a consumer-friendly way of saying managed access point system.
That is exactly what it is. 10 years ago, if you wanted a seamless Wi-Fi experience across a big house, many people hired a professional to install a controller and multiple access points because doing it yourself was still fairly complex. Mesh companies took that technology, simplified the interface, and made it so you could set it up with a smartphone app. They democratized, managed networking, but in doing so, they leaned heavily on the wireless backhaul feature because most people don't want to drill holes in their walls to run Ethernet.
Which leads to Daniel's other point. Why is mesh so heavily marketed in retail when a wired access point is clearly superior? Is it just because of the no wires promise?
It is almost entirely because of the no wires promise. Retailers know that the number one barrier to someone upgrading their home network is the physical labor of running cable. If you tell a customer, "Just plug these three cubes into power outlets and you are done," they will buy it. If you tell them, "You need to run Category 6 cable through your attic," they will walk away. Plus, internet service providers love mesh because they can rent it to you for an extra $10 a month as a premium coverage service.
But there is a bit of a lie in that marketing, isn't there? Because, as Daniel found out, the no wires version often performs terribly in certain environments.
It is a trade-off that isn't clearly explained on the box. In a 60-meter apartment with thick concrete walls, which is very common here in Jerusalem, a wireless mesh is going to struggle. The signal has to fight through the same concrete to talk between the nodes as it does to talk to your phone. If the nodes can't hear each other well, the whole system collapses. Marketing focuses on coverage rather than throughput. They can honestly say Wi-Fi in every room, but they don't mention that the Wi-Fi in the far room might only be 10% of your actual in the far room might only be 10% of your actual internet speed.
It is interesting that Daniel mentioned those flat Ethernet cables. I have used those before. They are thin enough to fit under most doors or behind baseboards. It seems like a prosumer middle ground. You get the stability of a wire without having to call a contractor to open up your walls.
I love those things. They have changed the game for renters. And once you have that wire, the mesh advantage starts to shift. If you are willing to run a wire, you are much better off buying a dedicated access point or a mesh system that specifically supports Ethernet backhaul. Some cheaper mesh systems don't even have Ethernet ports on the satellite nodes, which is a huge red flag.
Let's talk about that access point mode Daniel mentioned. When he takes a mesh system and plugs in the Ethernet, he is turning off the mesh part of the logic, right? Or is he?
This is where the terminology gets blurry. Technically, mesh refers to the dynamic routing of data across multiple wireless hops. If you plug them all into Ethernet, they are no longer a mesh. In the traditional sense, they are just a group of coordinated access points. However, you still keep the single pane of glass, management. You still have one app to update all of them, one place to change the password, and those roaming protocols we talked about are still active.
So, if I am building a network today, and I have the ability to run those flat cables like Daniel did, is there any reason to buy a mesh kit instead of dedicated access points?
It depends on how much you want to tinker. If you buy a dedicated access point system, you usually need a controller. This is either a piece of software running on a computer 24/7 or a little dedicated hardware box. It gives you incredible data. You can see exactly which frequency every neighbor is using. You can create separate networks for your smart home devices, and you can tune the power of each antenna so they don't interfere with each other.
That sounds like exactly the kind of thing you would enjoy, Herman. But for most people, that sounds like a headache.
Exactly. And that is the value proposition of the mesh kits. Even when wired, they handle all that tuning automatically. They decide which channel to use. They decide when to move a device. For most people, that good enough automation is worth the slightly higher price of the hardware. But if you are like Daniel and you are seeing a massive speed drop, the automation is clearly failing you.
I want to go back to the speed drop for a second. Daniel said he got 1,300 down at the wall, but it drops significantly with the wireless mesh. If he uses the wired backhaul, does he get that full 1,300 everywhere?
Not necessarily wirelessly, because of the limitations of the WiFiFi standard itself. Even with WiFiFi 7, seeing sustained speeds well over a gigabit on a mobile device usually requires being very close to the transmitter and using very wide channels, like 160 or even 320 megahertz. But he should certainly be getting 700 to 900 megabits per second if he is wired. The 4-to-5-fold drop he saw was almost certainly due to the wireless backhaul overhead and interference.
So the wire doesn't just increase speed, it lowers latency too, right?
Huge difference in latency. In a wireless mesh, every hop adds several milliseconds of delay. If you are gaming or on a high-stakes video call, those milliseconds matter. A wired backhaul has sub-millisecond latency between nodes. It makes the whole network feel snappier.
We talked about marketing earlier. There is another thing I see a lot, range extenders. Daniel mentioned those too. Are those just a poor man's mesh?
Oh, range extenders are the villains of this story. A range extender is usually a single radio device that just listens to a signal and repeats it. It is like a person standing in a hallway shouting what they hear from the kitchen into the bedroom. But because they only have one mouth, they can't listen and talk at the same time. They immediately cut your bandwidth in half, and they don't handle roaming at all. Your phone will still stay stuck to the main router until it dies. Mesh was actually invented specifically to kill off the range extender market because range extenders were so consistently terrible.
So if someone is listening and they have a range extender plugged into a hallway outlet right now,
throw it away. Seriously. Or at least replace it with a wired access point. Even a cheap $10 router from 10 years ago, if you can run a wire to it and set it to access point mode, will perform better than almost any wireless range extender.
That is a bold claim, but I believe you. Let's look at the business side of this. Why don't we see mesh systems in big office buildings or airports?
Because they have the budget and the infrastructure to do it the right way. In an airport, you have hundreds of access points, and every single one of them is connected via high-speed fiber or copper to a central switch. They use a massive controller to manage thousands of clients simultaneously. Mesh is a fix for a lack of infrastructure. If you have the infrastructure, meaning the wires, mesh loses its primary reason for existing.
So Daniel's realization that a dedicated access point performed better isn't just a fluke. It is a fundamental truth of networking. The wire is king.
The wire is always king. We often say the best wireless network is one with as few wireless parts as possible. It sounds like a paradox, but it is true. You want the wireless part to be as short as possible, just the distance from your phone to the nearest wall or ceiling. Everything after that should be a physical cable.
I think there is a takeaway here about the 60-meter apartment specifically. In a small space, do you even need three nodes? Daniel thought he did, but then he found one good access point might do the job.
This is another great point. In a 60-meter apartment, if you can place one high-quality access point centrally, you probably don't need anything else. The problem is that most people have their router tucked away in a corner where the fiber or cable enters the house, often inside a metal cabinet or behind a television. That kills the signal. Daniel's wired approach allowed him to move the access point to a better location. Sometimes, one well-placed access point is better than four poorly placed mesh nodes.
It is about the physics of the signal, not just the quantity of the devices.
Exactly. Think of it like lighting. You can have 5 dim candles scattered around a room, or one really powerful floodlight in the center. In a small apartment, the floodlight is usually more efficient. But the candles are easier to sell because you don't have to worry about where the power comes from, you just light them.
I want to touch on what most people get wrong about fast roaming. You mentioned those protocols, 802.11k and V. If I am setting up a network with 3 different access points, and I just give them all the same name, the Poppleberry network, why doesn't my phone just handle it?
Because the Wi-Fi standard, in its original form, didn't have a mechanism for the network to tell the client what to do. The client, your phone, is in charge, and phone manufacturers program their devices to be conservative. They don't want to switch access points too often because every switch can cause a tiny drop in connection, maybe half a second. So, they wait until the signal is almost unusable. The K and V protocols allow the access point to send a list of neighboring access points to the phone. It says, "Hey, here is a map of other points you can see, and here is how busy they are." It makes the phone much smarter about when to...
And the R protocol.
That is, fast transition. It speeds up the actual handshake. Normally, when you join a new Wi-Fi point, there is a whole security exchange that has to happen. 802.11R allows the phone to pre-authenticate with the next access point before it even leaves the current one. It reduces the gap in connection from maybe 500 milliseconds down to less than 50. You won't even notice it on a voice-over IP call.
This is what makes a mesh system, or a managed AP system, feel like one big network instead of 3 separate ones.
Exactly. And Daniel's question about why mesh is marketed so much, it is because it bundles all that complexity into a buy now button. Most people don't want to learn what 802.11v is. They just want their Netflix to stop buffering when they walk into the kitchen.
I think we should offer some practical advice for someone who is in Daniel's shoes. They are in a medium to small apartment, they are frustrated with their Wi-Fi, and they are looking at a $200 mesh kit at the store. What should they do first?
Step 1. Look at where your current router is. If it is in a cabinet or on the floor behind a couch, move it. Just getting it up to head height and away from metal can increase your range by 30%.
Step 2. The long cable test.
Yes. Do what Daniel did. Buy a 50-foot flat Ethernet cable for $15. Run it across the floor temporarily to a secondary access point in the room where you have bad signal. If your speeds suddenly jump to what you are paying for, you know the problem isn't your internet, it is your wireless backhaul.
And if they decide to go with a mesh system because they like the app and the ease of use, what should they look for to ensure they don't get that 4-fold speed drop?
Look for tri-band. A tri-band mesh system has a third radio dedicated entirely to the backhaul. It is like having a private lane on the highway just for the routers to talk to each other. It doesn't solve the interference problem entirely, but it prevents the halving of your bandwidth. It is more expensive, but it is the only way to get near gigabit speeds on a wireless mesh.
But, as we've established, even a cheap dual-band mesh system will perform like a tri-band system if you just plug in an Ethernet cable.
Correct. The wire turns a $200 system into a $500 system in terms of performance.
That is the ultimate networking life hack. Spend $20 on a cable to save $300 on hardware.
It is the hill I will die on, Korn. Our house is a testament to that. I think I have measured every centimeter of signal in this place.
I know you have. I have seen the heat maps you draw on the kitchen table.
They are beautiful, aren't they? But in all seriousness, there is a second-order effect here. When you use a wired backhaul, you are also making the airwaves cleaner for your neighbors. Because your nodes aren't constantly screaming at each other wirelessly, there is less overall noise in the building. In a dense apartment complex, if everyone switched to wired backhaul, everyone's Wi-Fi would get better.
It is a civic duty, really. Wired networking is a form of urban renewal.
I love that. We are cleaning up the invisible smog of the city.
So, looking forward, we are seeing Wi-Fi 7 devices as the new high-end standard, and industry groups are already starting very early work on whatever the next Wi-Fi generation will be. Does that change this mesh versus AP debate?
Future Wi-Fi generations will likely introduce even more coordination features, things like more advanced beamforming and ways for multiple access points to work together better in dense environments. But and this is a big but, they will still rely on the access points being able to communicate with each other with very low lag. And guess what the best way to do that is?
Let me guess, a wire?
Exactly. Even with fancy new coordination features and future standards, a dedicated copper or fiber line will always have lower latency and higher consistency than a signal traveling through air and walls. Physics hasn't changed.
It feels like we are in this transition period where the hardware is getting so fast that we are hitting the limits of what the air can actually carry in a crowded environment.
Exactly. We are trying to push more and more data through a very narrow pipe. It is like trying to fire a fire hose through a straw. Eventually, you just need a bigger pipe, and that is what the Ethernet cable is.
I think we have thoroughly demystified the mesh marketing for today. Daniel, I hope that helps with the new apartment setup. It sounds like you are on the right track with the old access point and a long wire strategy. It might not be as pretty as three matching white cubes, but the speed tests don't lie.
And if you really want it to look pretty, those flat cables can be painted or hidden under the edge of the carpet. There is no excuse for bad Wi-Fi in 2026.
Well said. Before we wrap up, I wanted to mention that if you are interested in the deeper layers of how this data actually moves once it hits that wire, check out our last episode, number 285, where we did a deep dive into the OSI model. It explains exactly what happens to that packet as it travels from your phone to the server 10,000 miles away.
That was a fun one. I still think the data link layer is the unsung hero of the internet.
It really is. And hey, if you've been listening to My Weird Prompts for a while, and you're finding these deep dives useful, we would really appreciate it if you could leave us a review on Spotify or your favorite podcast app. It genuinely helps other curious people find the show, and we love reading your feedback.
It really does make a difference. We are a small operation here in Jerusalem, and every review helps us keep the lights on and the Ethernet cables running.
You can find all our past episodes, including the ones we referenced today about mesh networking and cognitive toolboxes, at our website, myweirdprompts.com. There is also a contact form there if you want to send us a prompt of your own. We are always looking for new rabbit holes to dive down.
Just make sure it is a weird one. We like the ones that make us scratch our heads.
Thanks for joining us today. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We will see you next week.
Stay curious, and maybe buy a longer Ethernet cable. Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.